tapestry, she said. Danae? I called, stopping her before we went back into the other room. Why are you angry with me? Her small shoulders pushed up with a heavy breath before falling again. I'm not, she said, turning. I didn't think you would have to find out about my training, my position. I thought... She shook her head fiercely. I don't know what I thought. What does it change? I asked her. Then my eyebrows drew together in consternation. And you do realize I know very little, yes? You can tell I'm not like you. Not the woman or princess I'm supposed to be. They keep me hidden as much for that as for my position. And you are expecting my censure? I asked her. She looked at me, her cheeks flushed with color, her chin proud and high. She said nothing. You will not receive it. She drew in a sharp breath, but she did not respond to this. We should continue, she told me, her voice softer. I'm sure your attendants have gathered. Attendants? She led me back into the main room, where four women in white had appeared. They knelt fully down onto their hands and knees. I jumped forward. Get up, I said quickly, catching one's arm. You don't have to kneel. They got up, looking among one another, saying nothing. They're Ishru, Danae told me. I gave her a little shake of my head, not understanding. Servants, she whispered. Only they are allowed to serve royalty. Why? I asked, shivering. They have no tongues, she said, so they cannot betray us. My stomach clenched. You don't need to kneel to me, I told them. Ever. One woman met my eyes and nodded. The others dropped their chins to their chests. Calyx should return soon. If you ever need anything, Galen and I are close, Danae said, bringing me to the balcony again. She pointed to stone walkways that led over the open air to two other castles. I'm on the right, she said, and Galen's is left. The three faces always linked, always separate. Get some rest if you can. I imagine I won't see you until the morning. I watched her go over the walkway, fearlessly moving forward as the wind blew at her dress. When she was out of sight, I looked to the left. Galen's and Danae's castles were angled slightly off in either direction, so the points of their balconies faced away. But going closer to my husband's rooms, I could see Galen's balcony. And he was there. And he was looking over. At me. And frowning. I turned away from the dangerous edge, going back to my rooms, and telling the guard not to admit anyone without my permission. I sat on the large bed in my room just to try it. Beds were a rare luxury found only in Jitra. Traveling in the desert, we had rolled pallets and rugs that kept us above the sand, and I found I was quickly becoming used to the indulgence. Suddenly, I wished that Danae hadn't gone. The Ishru were floating like ghosts through the room, but none of them could speak, and no one could tell me what was expected of me now, or how I was meant to get food. "Do any of you know where my clothing is?" I asked. One came to me and bowed, not meeting my eyes, and she turned and moved away. So I followed her through a door that led to a narrow staircase and another door. She opened the door, and I found a room full of fabric, much of it for making dresses like the one I'd been made to wear, but also a row of hooks with more finished-looking pieces on it. I pulled on a bright blue one with long sleeves that would cover the length of my dress, and it was lined with soft fur from a kind of animal I'd never seen. For the first time in days, I felt warm, and I shivered with pleasure at the sensation. "Perfect," I murmured. I returned to the main chamber just as Kairos was coming past my guard. I crossed my arms with a sigh.
"Not happy to see me?"
he asked, raising his eyebrows. "Oh, no, Kai. It isn't that. I told my guard earlier not to admit guests without my approval."
"Well, I am your brother, so it shouldn't count. But that is what I'm here about, as it happens."
He looked around and whistled with a smile.
"Nice room."
He started nosing around the room before he went out to the balcony.
"What are you here about?"
I called, not understanding. He came back inside and shut the doors, then raised an eyebrow at the door I'd come from.
"Kai?" I asked again.
"Your protection," he said. "We didn't get a chance to talk during the ride, and I need you to tell me exactly how bad things are."
"Bad?" I asked.
Kairos crossed his arms, his gaze heavy on me.
"Tell me how bad it is."
I shook my head.
"How bad what is?"
"The way he speaks to you. It isn't exactly hard to imagine him doing worse. The man cannot abide anything outside his control."
He watched my face, studying my every reaction.
"Either he's harmed you already, or he will."
The only thing I could think of was the pain of our first night of marriage. But even as little as I wanted to mention that to my brother, I was led to believe that was expected. But something else in his words caught my attention.
"What do you mean, he will?"
I asked. He gave me a crooked smile.
"You know I know things, Shai. And sometimes I see things. And I'm never wrong. So stop denying it and just tell me."
"He hasn't hurt me, I swear it." My throat went dry and I covered my mouth.
"Does that mean he'll find out about..."
I held up my hands, helpless, unable to say it. He stared at me for long moments.
"Maybe,"
he said.
"But if he threatens you, your kinsmen will stop him. Decisively, king or not."
Shaking my head, I sighed.
"You're not kinsmen. You're just one kinsman. What will you do?"
I asked, trying to tease him.
A hint of a smile graced his serious face.
"You forget, little sister. I'm not Kale or Aiden or even Rian. I don't punch first and ask questions later. I'm the clever brother, and if I need to be, I can be more powerful than the whole clan together."
"There's only one reason I'd need such protection," I told him, looking at my hands. "Quieter," I asked. "Have you heard from Kata?" He drew closer, looking over his shoulder and nodding.
"She'll find you. It may take her time, but as soon as she can, she'll come. Has it happened again?"
I shook my head. "No. I think I was imagining things. I had to have imagined it, don't you think? How could someone from the desert have her power?" His smile became crooked and knowing.
"You know I know things, and sometimes I see things,"
he told me again.
"Kata says that's some kind of ability between the elements."
My breath stopped. Kairos had an ability?
"Kai," I started. The guard opened the door, and Kai's smile disappeared as Calyx came into the room.
He raised his eyebrow, looking over Kairos. "You can go,"
he told Kai.
Kairos kissed my cheek and glared at Calyx.
"I'll see you in the morning, Shai,"
he told me.
Calyx watched Skyros as he left and then turned back to me.
Come, my love. It is time for you to meet my Vestai.
I thought the presentation was tomorrow. He nodded.
Yes, but this is a private introduction. It isn't appropriate for them to meet you like commoners.
So there are more Vestai than just Atalo? I asked. He took my hand and brought me through the palace to the courtyard outside. There was a carriage waiting there, and he led me into it.
"Is a title for wealthy landowners," he said, sneering. "Men who would fashion themselves king if they could."
The carriage was a silly conveyance, as we only traveled a few minutes before the carriage door opened again. We were in the courtyard of a white stone building, not unlike the castles, but smaller, and not nearly as grand. Where are we?
This is the Consilium,
Calyx said as the guards bowed to us.
The Vestai meet here to discuss matters of state.
Everything in this city seems so new, I marveled, looking up as we began to walk forward.
It is,
Calyx said, tugging my hand.
Previous kings of the Trifectate allowed sorcerer pagans to assist in the construction of many of our buildings. Naturally, any vestige of pagan sympathy needed to be dismantled. Is this loyal?
I knew he meant Elemente, and my heart tripped over the memory of the boulder coming down, smashing over the road to protect Kairos. We walked through the archway and down a long stone hallway. As we passed a break in the stone, I looked in the doorway to a large room with overfilled shelves. What's that? I asked.
Library,
he said.
All our historical books. The appropriate ones, of course.
I had heard of books, but I'd never seen them. Paper and ink were not things that could survive for long in the desert. Our stories, histories, and legends were written in rock, the eternal places in Jitra that wind and sun couldn't break. In comparison, this room full of quiet paper seemed fragile, impermanent. I stopped, curious, but Calyx sighed impatiently.
Shalia, I care very little for catering to the whims of the Vestai. I would like to get this over with as quickly as possible.
Yes, of course, I said, and I let him lead me down the hall. Quietly, I asked, why do you cater to their whims, I mean? You are king. This seemed to please him, and he looked at me, pausing for a moment to touch my cheek.
Exactly my thoughts,
he said.
But they are an old power that challenges my reign every chance they have. I prefer not to give them more opportunity.
We turned a corner and there was another room off the hallway, but this one made him pause. He squeezed my hand tighter and walked into the room. It was small, with a full wall of glass to look out over the ocean that made it seem bigger, endless. The only thing in the room, though, was a large painting with the figure of a woman on it. She was seated, her chin raised, her hair jet black, her green eyes bright, a silvery crown on her head. Calyx was staring at her, and haltingly he moved forward. The painting rested on a small mantel, and it had three candles beneath it. He took up a flint to light the candles. As he did, I touched his arm, and he flinched away. "She's your mother," I realized. Dene had said her mother died, but I wasn't sure when it had happened. He nodded, his throat working. When did you lose her?
A year before my father,
he said, his voice rough and low. I was hesitant to touch him again, but I was standing close to him, so I tried resting my hand on his back. He didn't object, and lit the last candle and put his arm around my waist, staring up at her portrait.
After she died, nothing was the same again.
How did she die? His back rippled with tension, and he shook his head. Why is her portrait here? I whispered. Why not in the palace? He swallowed.
Her father, my grandfather, was the leader of the Consilium until his death, less than a year ago. It was a great comfort to him to have her here.
Gently, slowly, I stroked his back. We could move it to the palace.
Whatever had opened within him closed, and he pulled away from me.
No.
He took my hand again and brought me out of the room. Another turn later, we arrived at a huge room with ceilings that soared high above us and a single long table in the space, not nearly filling it. Men were standing around the room, and they turned as we entered.
Vestai,
Calyx called.
I wish to introduce my bride to you.
Though he seemed to have called to all of them, one man, his black robes layered with a shimmery silver cloth, came forward. He was older than Calyx, but one of the youngest in the room. The others were mostly gray old men.
My queen, I am High Vestai Thessaly.
He greeted me, bowing and touching his forehead three times.
Come,
he said, offering me a hand. I took it, and he led me to a large chair at the head of the table. No one else sat, and I felt instantly out of place, watched.
We are most pleased to welcome you here, my queen,
the Vestai said.
We have very high hopes for the tremendous benefits of both peace and marriage for our king.
Standing beside me, Calyx bristled. They all stopped staring at me, waiting. I looked to Calyx, but he gave me no indication of what I should say to these people who he clearly had to consider, who had, at least at times, been his enemies. I am grateful for your hope and your welcome, I told him, my voice quiet but strong. Thank you. And I confess, I find little in the king that needs improvement by either peace or marriage. I looked at Calyx for approval, and he beamed at me. My chin rose higher, and I smiled at him.
Such a loving wife,
the Vestai said, but he sounded disappointed.
Well, he said to me, inclining his head. It is so important that your nobles can serve you as they ought. To which end, I would like to offer my daughter, Adria, to be your personal handmaiden.
This raised the hairs on the back of my neck. The Vestai snapped his fingers and a door opened, and I was sure there was some double meaning in his words. I hadn't seen anyone attend Calyx. Had he refused his nobles in the past? Perhaps he had good reason to want servants without tongues. My honored queen, said a voice breezing into the room. A woman in blue came before me, taller than Danae, but not by much, with hair a lovely light brown color that I'd never seen before. She had a round face and big cheeks that reminded me of a baby. She bowed so deep she was nearly cowering before me. But there was arrogance there, a calculated knowledge I saw mirrored in her father's smug gaze. I felt Calyx's eyes on me, and I looked to him, his stony face unreadable. If my king thinks it proper, I said after a long moment.
Surely the whole kingdom will breathlessly wait upon you, my love,
Calyx said.
So why not let Domina Viato be the first?
The High Vestai smiled like he had won some sort of victory.
So you see, Calyx said sharply. She is soft-spoken and beautiful. She will be an excellent queen.
The High Vestai met Calyx's eyes.
Yes. Now perhaps you can turn your gaze to the problems brewing in the city.
Calyx waved a hand.
Tomorrow shall put all your fears to rest, Vestai.
He smiled, but it was thin and tight.
I certainly hope so, my king. Yes,
Calyx said.
The three-faced god does not tolerate much doubt.
This made the High Vestai's face lose a little color, but neither party retracted their words.
Excellent,
the Vestai said.
My queen, I look forward to your presentation tomorrow.
He bowed to me again, and I nodded to him, and then looked to the girl still at my feet. Adria, I said, and she looked up, and though her face was serene, I saw the same smugness of her father in her eyes. You may attend me beginning tomorrow morning, I told her. She bowed again, smiling at the floor. We rode back to the castles in silence. Calix was tense, his movements sharp, and he wouldn't meet my gaze. When we arrived, Calix made an excuse to leave me, and I returned to my chambers. My Ishru appeared with food, and I ate a little as they brushed my hair, braided it back, and offered me a garment like the fur-lined one that was only a thin, flimsy fabric that tied in front. For bed? I asked her. She nodded. I took off my clothes, trying to slip into it quickly, but they stopped me, washing me with fragrant, warm cloths. Then they pulled the gown on, tying it carefully in front in little bows. Thank you, I said, nodding to them. They disappeared. With a sigh, I went out onto my balcony. The wind was stronger, kicking the bottom of the robe back. I shivered, returning inside to take the coat I'd worn earlier and wrap it around me again. Then I walked to the point of the balcony and stood, letting the wind ruffle my braid, kiss my face, lick at my clothing. The crash of the waves so far below was hypnotic, and I shut my eyes, leaning into it. An arm came around my waist, and I yelped, jerking away from the edge. I turned, and my husband smiled at me, holding me still.
I scared you?
He asked. My heart was pounding, and I nodded. He plucked strands of hair away from my face, and he kept looking at me, taking me in as he drew a deep breath and let it go.
You did well today. I'm looking forward to tomorrow,
he told me, letting his finger run down my cheek.
You have no idea the hope you'll give my people. Our people.
I swallowed, wishing I could calm my heart just by wanting it. Tell me more of your people, I asked. He smiled like this pleased him.
Things have been difficult,
he confided.
Since my father, since his reign and his death, we were torn apart by war with the islanders for much of his reign, and it devastated us. We spent all our money on defenses, ships, weapons, and during a war effort that is glorious and righteous. But then it ends.
His shoulders lifted.
I inherited my country at a time when the people were broken. We had won the war, but at a steep cost. We were weak and vulnerable. The Sorokins across the sea came and raided Liatos, pillaging and devastating us further.
With a sigh, I slid away from him, sitting on a bench. He followed me, straddling the bench, so his legs caged me in, and his hands wandered on me, touching my shoulder, my arm, my back. I always thought I had an affectionate family. I wasn't used to being touched like this, frequently, possessively, in a way that made me unsure if it was a display of warmth or a display of power. What happened after the Sorokins raided?
We had to defend our people. We used the last of our resources to turn them away. That winter, our people starved and froze and died. It was my first year as king,
he told me, and his hand fell away.
I felt responsible for my people's suffering.
I turned a little toward him. What did you do? His mouth crooked up, and his hand rose. He dragged his thumb over my jaw in a bemused way.
I studied mostly. My thought was that we needed food before anything else.
What good was defending the country if everyone in it starved? I looked at our crops and why they weren't producing reliably. I found ways to irrigate better. We found that there were ways to get more minerals in the ground and grow stronger crops. But then, of course, as we grew the crops, our roads were insufficient, washing away. Always more problems. Problems with logical answers, all of them.
His eyes drifted over me. I rubbed my hand on his arm. You took care of your people, I realized. He nodded, rustling my hair with his nose.
I fed my people for years, and yet recently, the past year or more, the god is displeased. Droughts cause crops to die. Frost sweeps in early to take what we have. We had a tornado decimate half the fields in Kirikatos.
He sighed.
And this insidious abomination of sorcery.
He shook his head slowly.
For everything else, I have discovered solutions, ways to fix these problems and heal my people.
That's why you're looking for that elixir, I said, and my heart suddenly beat faster. I had almost forgotten there was something that took away elemental powers. If I could help him find it, if I could use it, I would be safe. Have your men found anything yet?
No,
he said.
They're searching the desert, but there are few places to hide something of this nature. I believe it would have to be in the mountains. Can you think of any place that would make sense?
The lake?
But I didn't say it. It was too precious, too complicated to lead him there.
If he found the lake, whether or not that contained his elixir, he would have considerable power over the clans. Without that water reserve, our survival would be at the whims of the spirits. And what if I didn't have this power, and the elixir was there?
He would have the ability to take Kata's power away from her. And I would be responsible for leaving her powerless before the Trifectet, again.
There is the cave of our ancestors, I said, where we honor our dead. But it's all hard ground. I don't know where anything could be hidden. He nodded sharply.
I will send word to my Kaisatori.
I will help however I can, I told him. I wasn't sure if I meant it or not. But whether I needed the elixir found or wanted to prevent him from ever finding it. I wanted to know what he knew.
He kissed my neck. Good, he said.
I asked, will you tell me more about tomorrow's ceremony? His fingers touched my chin, applying light pressure until I lowered my head a little, ducking to be closer to his mouth.
The three-faced god appreciates pageantry,
he said.
It's a grand performance. Everything must be perfect. The crowd must be vast and eager. You must be raised up on a stage for all to see.
His fingers trailed over my skin.
You must wear the perfect costume to look the part of a queen. And then the play will begin. The Trivatis will speak the holy words, a tradition that is both ancient and eternal. And you will dazzle the crowd, and the people will cheer, and they will remember how powerful their king can be.
Powerful? I asked. His fingers ran over my neck, brushing my pulse, his hand spreading out over my throat and moving before I could say anything about the strange gesture.
The three-faced god is powerful,
he said, bringing his mouth closer to my ear.
And he grants us his power. He wants the people to stand in awe of us, to kneel at our feet, and remember that we brought them up from nothing. We stand between them and oblivion.
I shivered, unable to speak, and he pulled my head down and pressed his lips to mine. Three Silver Branches. The day dawned cool and beautiful. The sun on the water had all the dangerous beauty of a desert mirage, sparkling and twinkling and making the water look like a living thing. The Ishru dressed me in a silvery, shimmery swath of fabric, and an older woman came and adjusted the dress, suiting it better to my frame. She then put a blue dress, the color of night sky, over my head, laying it along the silver one, so it was edged with the bright metallic color. Dark blue ribbon was next, and she knotted it carefully so that it outlined my breasts, hugged my hips, made me feel somehow taller, if still incredibly exposed. She snapped her fingers, and the Ishru brought out another coat, this one a matching blue and lined with white fur, knotted with silver threads that made me ache for the desert.
"The princess advised me that you are used to much warmer climes," she said. "Will this be too warm?"
She slid the coat onto my shoulders, and I looked down. There was a stiff collar around my neck, and this one didn't close, but cut away to show the dress underneath. It was the softest thing I'd ever had on my body, and I sighed with pleasure. "This is exquisite," I told her. "Can I have more like these?" She smiled like a kind old mother and bowed her head.
"My queen."
"What's your name?" I asked her.
"Zova, my queen."
I pressed my hand to hers. "Thank you. This is lovely." She bowed again and dipped away from me. She picked up another stretch of the silver film and let it flutter down over my head, wrapping it back so it wasn't tied but held still. The guard opened the door to let Adria in, and I scowled at him, steeling myself to deal with her. She bowed, and I noticed she looked resplendent in a dress of green and gold. "You may stand," I told her. "I dislike people bowing to me." Her eyebrows rose, and I wondered if this was something she would report to her father. Then she looked me over, her mouth pursing. "You look very beautiful, my queen," she allowed. She didn't sound very pleased. "Thank you," I said. "Would you lead me to the presentation?" She bowed her head. "Yes, my queen," she said. And the guard opened the door as she led me out of the room, down the hall, and to the front of the castle. In darkness, held back from the wide arch, I could see thousands of people and the platform and everything Calyx described. The people were noisy like the ocean, moving in the same restless, relentless way. Adria stopped, and I kept moving, seeing Calyx coming forward to me. He took my hand, raising it to his lips to kiss, as I struggled to find my breath.
"Don't be nervous, my love," he said.
Men stood behind him, all dressed in a version of Calyx's clothing, the same style he wore to our wedding. I had seen enough guards to figure this was a military dress of some sort. Yet today he glinted with shiny silver details, a brightly handled sword and the jeweled knife that looked like a treasure from the islands. A crown on his head, three silver branches woven together to form a circle, shimmered in the sun. A small boy shot through the ranks, tangling in the knees of one of the men as he bent over. I recognized High Vestai Thessaly and went over to him.
"My queen,"
he greeted me, giving me the formal triple bow.
"May I present my son, Arrow Thessaly?"
Arrow gave me his own version of the triple bow, which wasn't quite as sharp in his small body. "Three blessings," he mumbled quickly, like it should have all been a single word. "Thank you," I told him, crouching down. "How old are you?" He held up three chubby little fingers. A fourth started to lift, and he tucked it down with the other hand. "Oh, you look at least 5. Are you very brave?" I asked. He nodded. "And very noble, I suspect." He nodded again. "Will you?"
"Shalia,"
Kalex said sharply, standing before me and putting his hand in front of my face. I put my hand in his, and he pulled me to my feet.
Hi, Vestai.
Kalex said, nodding. Thessaly bowed to him with his hands on his son's shoulder.
Ero, go find your mother, he said. I'll be there in a moment. Adria, you may follow your brother,
Kalex told her. Kalex nodded once to me and guided me away from Thessaly without another word. The other men began walking forward, progressing by twos down the walkway. We settled into line behind them, and I lost sight of Thessaly as my heart tripped faster in my chest. As we crested the archway, I looked down to see the vast pool beneath us, reflecting the sunlight and flickering like it was on fire. Drummers around the pool pounded out our footsteps, and the crowd fell very silent. I saw Thessaly on a wide platform with two other men behind him, and a beautiful woman holding Ero with Adria beside her. The wind went still, and I barely breathed as we marched, dipping down behind the height of the platform before climbing the staircase up to it. I stepped onto the platform, and the people cheered. My heart swelled as their joyous noise overtook the drums. Kalex stepped forward, and my hands fell to my sides. The people quieted.
My people, we have known war and fear and hunger, he said. We have been in an age of terror and pain. That age is over.
The people cheered for this, and my stomach felt shivery and nervous. Kalex waited, collecting their approval.
Today I give you a queen born of the desert, foreign to our city, our country, our home. Knotted together in the most eternal of bonds, together we give you peace.
He looked back to me, giving me a brilliant smile that at once felt stunning and intimate and utterly new.
Together we bring you love.
The people cheered at this anew, and I stood silent. Kalex stepped back, moving behind me to gather up the silver filmy material that covered my face.
My people, meet my wife, Shalia,
he yelled right in my ear, and stepped forward and took the fabric and pulled. It was as shocking as when Galen stole my first veil from me, and I gasped and blinked as the force of their cheers hit me like a blast. Women and children and men were jumping, heaving, pushing at the guards, their faces open and eager and screaming their approval. I felt like the rocks at the bottom of the cliff, the force of them churning against me, sweeping me away. I sensed motion on the platform, and a small man in a black coat with a length and style similar to mine appeared beside me. He held up my crown, a thinner, daintier version of my husband's, and the crowd went quiet again.
By the might, the power, and the right of the three-faced god,
he boomed,
I crown Shalia of the Desert Peoples, the Queen of the Bone Lands, by holy appointment. She will live in the service of the three-faced god. She will reign in the glory of the three-faced god, and she will die in honor of the three-faced god.
The crown settled on my hair as a sudden panic clutched my heart at those last words. I looked at my husband, but his expression was unchanged as the people cheered again, louder, wild, pushing forward, so I felt a jolt at the platform. Kalex, I said, my hand reaching for his as the platform swayed. The guards pushed the people back, rough and forceful. But I didn't find his hand. I looked at him, and his head was turned, his eyes behind me. I followed his gaze. The pool of water that extended beneath the archways looked strange, like it was forming a white crust. People screamed, and my focus whipped away from the water to see them pointing behind me. When I looked back to the pool again, it was too late. Huge vines of ice were twining up out of the pool, curling forward like they were reaching for something. They were reaching for me. Calyx! I cried, leaping and straining to get to him. He met my eyes, but it happened so quickly he didn't even get the chance to save me. The ice caught me, freezing, shimmering vines wrapping my feet and pushing me up, up, up into the air as fear strangled a scream in my chest. Ropes of ice as thick as tree branches formed a cage around me, and then the ropes grew spikes, pushing Galen and Kairos with their hacking swords away. It was cold inside the cage, and quieter. My own breath magnified, rattling around inside the ice. There were wide gaps between the ice branches that meant I could see out, but in a limited way, the light refracting and bending as it came through the glass-like ice. I was nearly 20 feet above the platform, far enough that if the ice broke, it would be a long way to fall. The ice, wrapping my feet, pulsed like there was energy rolling through it, and my fingertips tingled and itched. The air around me felt thick, tangible, like it was full of fine threads that breathed and rushed with energy. No, not energy. Magic. Something in the ice was calling to me, making my blood rush and beat, making power thicken around my fingertips. The ice around my feet loosened, and I gasped, stepping out of it. But the power didn't calm, rushing so fast it made me dizzy. It was an Elementa who was controlling the ice, and being so close to it made my power tremble frighteningly close to the surface. With every terrified heartbeat, my power drummed closer. There was no denying what I was. Not now. Not with the feeling so intense beneath my hands. I was Elementa. And in a moment, my husband and his whole court would see me completely unmasked if I couldn't control the threads weaving wildly around my hands.
"We have been in an age of terror and pain," a voice yelled, "but it is not over."
The voice seemed to move, changing locations in the middle of a word, a syllable, a breath. I tried to track it, but I couldn't see enough around me to even begin to follow the source of the sound.
"You steal our people from their beds,"
a new voice shouted.
"Kill them,"
I heard Calyx shouting at his guards.
"You hunt and kill those of us with power."
This was another voice. I was breathing in short, little gasps, trying to suppress the threads pushing at my fingertips. And skies above, it wasn't working. Now several voices joined in.
"You have no power, you have no might, and you have no dominion over the resistance."
My eyes roved over the crowd, trying to find who was doing this. Everyone was moving, turning, talking, searching. But there was one face staring straight at me. Unmoving. Smiling. Rian winked, and I couldn't tell if he truly saw him or not, but I watched Calyx stretch out his hand toward my brother. Instantly my control on my power snapped, and I felt it rush out, a wave of crushing, numbing relief sweeping through me. It was as if someone took a hammer to the side of the cliff the castles were built on, and one hard jolt threw my husband to the side, swaying the platform. The ice around me cracked, and a moment later it shattered, a barrage of sharp crystals that melted as they moved. I screamed as I fell, dropping toward the ground in the shower of ice shards. Arms caught me, but the force was too much, and we crashed to the ground in a heap. The fall slammed the breath out of my chest, and Galen was under me, gripping me tight, every inch of his body against mine. I couldn't open my eyes for long moments. I could smell him, like sweat and salt, and something I wasn't used to, that I vaguely knew from the ride here as the scent of forest. Green. Free. I was surrounded by his body. Safe and sheltered, and I dug my fingers into his chest, trying to claw out a breath. He touched my face, and I heard him calling my name, his chest heaving so hard that it pushed me up and down.
"Shalia,"
he said. I opened my eyes, my hands on him curled tight, and I drew in a hard breath. Kaelin held me as he sat up, then managed to get his legs beneath him to bring us to our feet without letting go of me. I stood and my knees sank as if I was standing in sand. He held me close. I was vaguely aware of him checking me over in his soldier's way, the touches quick and light and impersonal, but my head was buzzing and I was still struggling for deep, even breaths.
"Shalia?"
he asked, holding my arms now.
"Shalia?"
I nodded, belatedly. It was like all the noise around us rushed back in at once. Calix was yelling and pointing, and people were screaming, trying to rush out of the courtyard, but the gates were closed. There was a keening sound, and then a terrible crack as the platform buckled.
"Clear the platform!"
Kaelin shouted, and he pulled my hand, rushing to the stairs and tugging me behind him.
"Jump!"
he shouted at me, and I obeyed him, leaping from the stairs as the platform collapsed in a cloud of dust. His hand in mine anchored me, guiding me close to him. "Kairos!" I called, seeing him in the rising dust. Kaelin let go of my hand.
"Get her out of here,"
he told Kai. Kai pushed me in front of him as we ran up the walkway. I felt weak and disoriented, but I kept putting one foot in front of the other, glancing back to see his scimitar drawn and gleaming in the sun. When we were in the archway, I looked back and saw the madness. The gates were shut, and the guards were trying to control the terrified people. I watched them use their shields like weapons, battering people and pushing them back, hurting people. At the center of it all, my husband was barking orders for the guards to search the crowd by any means necessary, very nearly condoning their brutality. But somewhere in the melee, Rian was there too. Which one of them was more to blame for the people's suffering?
"Shy, come on,"
Kairos growled. "Rian will be trapped," I told him, my voice hushed.
"Rian wouldn't come into the courtyard without more than one way out,"
he told me, his eyes flinty. He wasn't surprised. He'd seen Rian too. Maybe he'd even known Rian would be there. I moved forward, and we rushed through the halls. We made it to my bedroom, and Kairos ordered the guard not to let anyone in without his explicit approval. He brought me to the bed, and I sat with a sigh.
"Are you all right?"
he asked. His head swept around the room carefully, and he asked,
"The shaking. Was that you?"
I swallowed and nodded slowly. "But not the rest?" He shook his head.
"No. That was the resistance. From what I can gather, that is the bulk of their forces, recruiting people with elements that need protection. That and some farmers and dissenters."
"But they seem so organized," I said, drawing my knees up.
"They are,"
he said.
"More than I can give Rian credit for, too. Whoever Rian's working with has a strong eye for that sort of thing."
"Why would Rian do this?" I asked, shivering. "He's attacking me!" Kai sat beside me on the bed, his shoulder pressed to mine.
"No,"
he said gently.
"I think our brother is a damn fool, but I can see at least that he was making an effort to do it in a way where you wouldn't get hurt. Except for being dropped from the sky, but at least Kaelin saw to that. And as far as I can tell, he's doing this to protect people from Calix's injustice. Especially the Elemente."
"Does Rian have an ability?" I asked.
He sighed. "Not that I know of. But Rian was in the islands during the massacre. Do you remember that? Whatever he saw while he was there, it changed him."
I drew a deep breath, uncomfortable with the idea that there were sides of my brothers I didn't know at all. I think Calix saw Rian. Kai's expression turned stormy and dark.
That Rian cannot risk. If your husband believes you have anything to do with this, even through Rian...
He stopped abruptly.
Skies, he muttered.
But I don't, I insisted. We don't, right? His eyes flicked to me and away.
I don't know if things like reason and responsibility really matter to your husband. If he wants to see a connection, he will.
I shook my head, standing from the bed. It was growing foggy and dark outside, and it felt like this was finding its way inside my mind and smudging what I was certain of. He wouldn't. He's my husband. I stepped closer to the glass, but looked back at Kai. What about Kata? I asked. He lifted his shoulders.
I haven't heard more.
Standing from the bed, he sighed.
I'm going to find Galen. You need your own guard, and I'm assuming he'll agree to it after today.
Will a guard help if it's my own brother endangering me? I asked. If it's my very hands? He raised an eyebrow.
Yes,
he said, coming and kissing my temple, before he left me alone again. The night the three-faced god walked. I wasn't shaking anymore, but there was an uneasy tremor deep inside me. I lay on the bed, but I couldn't sleep, staring at the ceiling as my heart thudded in my chest. I stood pacing about the chamber, walking out onto the balcony in the thickening fog. But there wasn't enough space to walk, and somehow the fog carried the green scent of Galen on it. How could I be thinking of him now?
Shy?
I heard, and I turned back toward the palace, but no one was there. Shy, I heard again, and I turned into the heart of the fog. Warm arms came out of the fog and wrapped around me, and Kata hugged me as the fog around us grew thicker still. Kata, I cried, pressing my face into her neck. So many emotions rushed through me like pebbles tumbling down a slope, and I looped my arms around her shoulders, hugging her tight. I have you, she whispered to me. I have you. You must have been so frightened, but you're safe now. Was that you today? I asked. With the ice?
No,
she said. That was another member of the Resistance.
There are many Elemente who have joined us.
So it was true, I said, what they were saying about hunting and killing those with power. She drew back from our hug. I told you that, before you were married. My chest felt tight. I know, I said.
And you didn't think it mattered to you, she said softly. Until now.
For all I spoke of caring for my people, of wanting to lead and save, she was probably right. The weight of this stung, but she put her hand in mine. I nodded. I have the power you always thought I did.
I figured, she said, her mouth tight.
I'm sorry it's not what you wanted. I looked at our hands. If we were back in the desert, this would just be one more thing for us to share. One more thing that makes us sisters in the way that birth didn't. And maybe I was stupid, I said. But I married him. And I'm here. And these powers are illegal, and he hates the people who practice them. And I'm married to him, Kata.
You're not stupid, she said fiercely. You protected your family.
I would have done the same if I had the chance. Can you fix me? I asked her. You can heal. Surely you can heal this. She frowned. You aren't broken, You don't need to be fixed. Calyx knows of an elixir that can take powers away from Elemente. If we can find that before him, I could drink it. I could use it.
No, she said, shaking her head. Such a thing doesn't exist. There is no elixir. Whatever errand he's on, he won't succeed. These powers are part of you. They are as essential to your body as your blood. They cannot be removed or rejected.
How can you know? You were so young when you left the islands. You barely know about your own power. She pulled away from me, crossing her arms.
I know enough. I've never heard of something that can curb elemental powers. Even the genocide didn't destroy them.
Then close the earth, A.D. You opened it. You must be able to close it. An indignant huff came out of her.
The powers retreated to the Aedes because of the genocide, Shalia. Like a child who runs and hides when their life is threatened. Like I had to hide in the desert after my family was murdered. Like I still hide. Because if your husband knew there was still a daughter of the High Priestess alive, my life would be forfeit. It is not as simple as opening a box and closing it again. And even if I could, it would remove all the Earth powers.
You would do that for your own gain? No, I told her, desperate, my hands beginning to shake. But there has to be a way. I can't control it. It just happens, and I can't stop it. And soon someone will be able to tell that it's me. Visions ripped through my head of rage on my husband's face, of blood and sharp things meant to punish me for this power I never wanted.
Stop, she said, and I looked up to her.
You can control it. You have to use it.
That's why it's unpredictable now. How do I learn to control it? How did you?
It's different for me.
She held out her hand, and the mist curled to meet it in a thin, swirling plume.
Most of my kind show their gifts very young. My gift never arrived, not that I could see. And then the night came that they say the three-faced god walked, and I could feel my power. And then the powers of so many other people rushing to me, overwhelming me, using me as a conduit, she said. And, well, you remember when I knew the Aedes needed to be opened again?
My fingers curled around hers. She had been so sick, and I'd never been more scared for her. We brought her to the lake at Jitra, and the water had healed her. But the search consumed her after that.
That's when she started to leave, and my parents refused to let me go with her. She left first for weeks, and then for months, and I had carried on without my best friend.
I know.
I rubbed my fingers over her skin in our clasped hands, and she gripped me back, binding us tight, letting me confess my shame.
I never asked you about the night the three-faced god walked. Your nightmares. I didn't want to ask. I didn't want to know.
And I didn't tell you, she said, her voice rough. Because I love you.
Because I've always loved you, and I don't want you to know. But I love you too, I told her. And I want to know what you've suffered. She nodded, not looking at me, but at the water.
I don't remember much. I was 11. I was a child. I was with my brother when the siege came. People panicked. I was locked in a room with my brother while my mother and sisters went to fight, and my father went to protect them. My mother's gift was legendary. She could rule the oceans. I don't know what happened. How it could have been.
Rian was there, trying to help the Vis people in the war. My mother and all her court were there, in their full power, in their full glory. How could one man have fought them and won?
She looked at me like I would have an answer. I heard they surrounded the islands. He had so many men, he just overwhelmed you.